All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fuck nicks? What's happening? My name is Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. Today on the show, I talked to John Dwyer. John Dwyer is the front man, the man, sometimes the only guy. I don't know. It's a complicated thing with John Dwyer. His band, The OCs, puts out records as OCs, sometimes as OCs, spelled O-C-S. He's been in other bands. He's got his own label, but he's the real deal, man. That new OCs record, or is it The OCs? OCs, O-C-S, that goes way back. And then The OCs is a good bulk of the records. Like the last two, last year, A Weird Exits and An Odd Entrances, both great, were out as The OCs. And now he just released another one in August by just OCs. So, yeah, and his label is Castle Face Records. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's all pretty interesting stuff. It's all good. The last couple of records are great. They're all good. I mean, there's been a lot of people in and out of his bands back in the day, back in San Francisco, going way back. I think they were, we'll talk about it all. There was a lot of different names, but the OCs is really what he's, what John is known for. And Ty Siegel's a big fan, that Bay Area crew. Sarah the Painter was back in SF back in the day when they were coming on, the Dwyer experience. He's an event, man. He's a marking post of something original. So I talked to him today. That was a hell of an intro. I don't usually do that big an intro. Seattle, can I tell you to please come on out to Third Place Records in Seward Park this Saturday, November 11th at 7 p.m. I'll be there with Brendan signing copies of Waiting for the Punch, Words to Live By from the WTF podcast. It's our last book event of the year, so we hope to see you all in Seattle, WTFers. We hope to see you all there. Also, I have a correction to make, like I'm really hung up on this shit. But the last episode, those of you who listened to me ramble on in the beginning about fried scallops and Cioppino at a place that may be called Joe's, I was mistaken. I was mistaken, and I've been there a lot. It's called Jack's Fish Spot in Pike Place Market, behind a fish cellar. So that's that. Jack's. I've corrected myself. I don't know if I'll get there, though. I got one day, man. I got one day in Seattle. Then I'm back at it. I could stay longer, really, because it seems that I'm not in this episode of GLOW. Seems like I got a few days off, but I got some things going on. It's a sad day around here, man. Today, like, you know, things are going all right. The world is, you know, still ending. But Buster's gone again. Buster ran out the door last night. And I don't know what to do, you know. I mean, I can just walk around and call his name so much, but I always get the feeling that he's gone for good. Anytime a cat gets out, I'm sure it's over. But it's been 24 hours. No, it hasn't. It hasn't, actually. Maybe he'll come back. All I can do is wait, call out his name, Buster Kitten. But I don't know what the fuck to do, man. You know, you have these cats. My old guys, they don't even try to get out anymore. And I was looking at something. I had some shit in the driveway. I held the door open just a little too long, and I just saw him, you know, just worm by and wander out. And it was too late. So, fuck. I just have to accept that if that's the life he wants or if he got eaten, that's what can I do? I'll go out and look around. I'll keep calling his name, and hopefully he'll come back. So fucking sad, man. There are sadder things, but just, you know, there's just things you don't need. I don't need my cat to be gone. I don't need one of my cats to disappear. It just fucking stinks. I've had a lot of them go. LaFonda and Monkey are fine. Big Head with the big balls, he's around. He might have chased Buster off. Scaredy Cat, he's been around. I've been feeding him sometimes twice a day. I don't know if he scared Buster off. Buster's he's a greenhorn out there. He doesn't have chops. He doesn't have the wild chops. He's got no game out there. Maybe they'll all come back, but I got him inside when he was about 2 months old. So I don't know what he's capable of. He's a smart fucker, not smart enough to, you know, outrun a pack of coyotes. But I don't know. Maybe it's innate. Maybe he can handle himself. I always think the worst. I hope he comes back. Buster! Buster! I used to, you know, the last time he got out, I could hear him squeal. He has a weird squeal. Buster! Buster! Fucking sad. So, what's happening? I'm going to, we're going up to Seattle. Seattle, I love Seattle. I used to like it even more. I used to just have fantasies about keep going north. Just keep going north. North of Seattle. On upward. Out into the islands. Out into the water. Get away. Go to where it's just poetry all the time and dampness and creeping clouds and darkness and beautiful, brisk water with sea animals. Yeah. Freedom, man. My house is falling down. It's falling apart. I got to make a decision, man. I got to get out before the whole thing crumbles or do something. It's a tiny house. I know this garage is mythic. I know this garage is where everything turned around and my life changed and it's got its own sort of, you know, reputation. But I think we got to accept that maybe I'm the component. Is that possible that I'm the component that makes it good, not necessarily the structure that I'm in? Is that possible? Is it? I don't know, man. I guess I wish I had more to say. I think I'm a little broken up about the cat. You know, I tried to pretend. I pretend to be a tough guy. I pretend like I can just dismiss it. Like, hey, man, you know, this is just the way it goes. Sometimes these cats, they hang out. Sometimes they don't. But I was getting to like that guy. You guys have been through this with me once already. But I was getting used to that guy. I liked him. And if he doesn't come back, I'll be sad. So I'll just have to see if he comes back. It's weird. You just don't need added sadness in this day and age. So I think we can get on with John Dwyer now. Dwyer has a new album out, Memories of a Cut-Off Head. It's coming out November 17th under the band name OCS. OCS. He released an album under the band name OCS earlier this year called Orc. He releases records. Him and Ty Siegel are like the record releasing madmen. They're very similar in that way. And I don't know. I would think that Dwyer is Ty's mentor to some degree. That's how I felt it. That's how I see it. They both live down the street from me. And when I listen to all of Dwyer stuff, the evolution of it, and like, it's good, man. It's good. And he's a mile a minute dude, active brain. For those of you who don't like when I talk, this one's for you. For those of you who like when I talk, that's all right. Just ride it out. Dwyer's got a lot to say. He goes. It's me and John Dwyer. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF.
Fire.
I just got a record, Jeremy Spencer and the Children. Do you know that record? Jeremy Spencer was the other guitar player in the first version of Fleetwood Mac. He was the Elmore James freak, right?
Yeah, right.
And this record, I just saw it yesterday over Permanent, and I'm like, what the fuck is
fucking
this?
Fucking Permanent, man. It's like going to a crack cocaine store.
And it turns out it's this record that he did in 1972 after he joined the Children of God cult. So it's Jeremy Spencer, you know, that guitar player who played with Peter Green and these people from the cult.
They're the backing band.
Yes, yeah,
I think you got to give it to old school cults, as they always had a band. Like, that's a problem. Like, you know, I don't feel like a lot of these cults nowadays are actually getting out there with their rock.
Yeah, they need some more music.
I would love to see a cult doing like electronic music now. At least let's upgrade
an electronic cult.
Yeah, just like techno cult or something. But like,
well, I guess you're right. I think in the '60s the music was so integrated into the message of transcendence that it was almost necessary.
Yeah, we don't have that so much.
I don't think so anymore. No. Like it was the entryway was the music.
It's hard to imagine Katy Perry. And yeah, right. Polygamist,
sure. No,
cult
not,
scenario.
No,
it doesn't happen. Work. It's, no. That's like a immediate satisfaction kind of music.
Oh, it's not, all about the. It's all power. About the bread. It's all about the. You know what I mean? It's not about the.
I'm sure she's a nice lady. I don't know her.
Yeah, no, but yeah, but
have you had her on?
No, I have not. I don't know Katy Perry. I don't know anything about her. I have been listening to Adele records and Lord records.
Hey, man, they're both really interesting.
They are, right?
They're the exception to the rule, I would say.
I guess so.
I remember when I heard Lord, I was like, I'm fucking surprised I like this. Because somebody was like, you haven't heard it? I was like, no, and they played it for me. And I was like, and I don't like shit anymore.
No?
When I see something I like, I really like it, so it's always a pleasure to see like a band I don't know and be like, fuck, finally.
Yeah.
But I've been just doing it for so long. I see so much music that when I hear something like that, that's actually quite popular. I surprise myself because I'm like, oh, an old man actually can like this music. You know, like it's cool. I can dig it.
She goes pretty deep, I think. I'm sort of
she's
like
just interesting. That's the bottom line. It's not just the same old.
It goes
a long way for me.
Yeah, yeah.
To have somebody being innovative or like
or odd.
Or like even earnest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like she's just like a person. Yeah. She was kind of dorky right out of the gate.
Right, right. Yeah. You know? So I don't like. I'm trying to figure out where. Like, I know exactly how I got turned on to you. Like, I somehow or another, being the old man that I am, I missed some chunk of music, you know, somewhere between like 1998 and, you know, 3 years ago.
It was kind of a terrible time.
but you were very prolific during that time.
Hey, dude, I don't have a job.
And then I go down to someone turned me on to Ty Segall, mm-hmm. and I guess it was Lance when Ty was still working up at the old permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And then people started mentioning your name, and then I think the album I came in on was the one with all the eyes and teeth on the cover.
Floating Coffin.
Yeah, Floating Coffin. So that's where I start with you. And then, like, not unlike a lot of musicians I talk to, I try to do a little research, and I'm like, oh, fuck. There's like 100 other records.
Yeah, I apologize.
I am
personally one of those people that people are like, how many records have you? And then they're like, geez, that's a lot. That's like a whole lot of salary for me to spend on records.
But then you sent me a lot of good records.
I encourage them to steal it off the internet. If it's too much, I'm like, just go to Pirate Bay. It's there.
But where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Rhode Island.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What part?
I was born in Riverside, Rhode Island, which is just kind of like a little trashy waterfront community. It's kind of awesome. I have like a lot of early memories from there. And then my mom moved over to Rumford. We lived on the 10-mile river over there. And then I moved to North Providence, and that's where I started getting into music. I saw like people from RISD.
Because I was there. I started doing stand-up on the road, doing one-nighters around that
Providence.
Area. I did, yeah, Periwinkles in Providence.
Periwinkles. Oh, wait.
In Davos Square.
Fucking A. Yeah, I remember that joint. See, that was one of those spots when I was a kid, I would ride by and I'd be like, what goes on in there? Mm-hmm. Is it a strip club? I don't know. I never got to go to any comedy until I was just about to move out to San Francisco. So I was probably like 18, 19 when I started.
How old are you now?
I'm 42.
All right, so I'm 53. They stole my car in Providence.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and I did shows in like Melody.
I grew up in
Cranston, Rhode Island.
Cranston.
The Cranston Bowl, dude.
I believe that's where the Bouffant was born. There's like certain hairstyles that like the women there still are rocking.
I did a show at the Cranston Bowl. I remember.
A bowling alley in Cranston.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's pretty hardcore.
Well, it was like
it's like doing a Klan rally or something. Sure. You're like, I've been all the way to the bottom.
Exactly. Well, they book out these one-nighters, you know, and a club.
So somebody just booked the joint.
Well, there were subcontractors. That was the way the business worked there. You'd work with these companies that would book one-nighters at these places that wanted to do a comedy night.
Mm-hmm.
So you just show up. I remember.
That's awesome.
There's
comedy's good like that though. You guys can like
get right
set
in
up
there.
Shop real
I know,
quick.
I
and
know.
You know what?
But sometimes
people like
not.
To have. Oh, I'm sure it's got to be but Bruiser too. But if you can get somebody laughing, then you got them for the night. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. If you hold them right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the reason I remember Cranston is there was a sort of a monumental horror show. I used to do this joke about
Cranston was a rough town.
But no, they were fine. It was packed, and the first night was always good when they do a comedy night because everyone in town would come. But mm-hmm. I did a joke about a plane crash, And some woman screamed, you know, don't talk about plane crashes. And it was like,
that's to me, that's like my mom right there. Like, she will be the person, like, I'll be sitting next to her and she'll just yell out and I'll be like, right. Jesus, mom.
But
like,
I
she'll
knew.
Say exactly.
Yeah. But I knew exactly what it was, because why would it be that? Like, she had lost somebody in a plane crash. So I had to deal with that. Did you just lose somebody?
No,
like,
no.
Yes,
oh,
she did.
She did, yeah.
No. You didn't. No, but like, she did. And it was one of those moments where
that must happen all the time as a fucking comedian. No, everybody knows.
Yeah, what are the odds, dude?
My son. One's deaf. Like, what,
no. I mean,
plane crash is pretty extreme.
But yeah, I thought I had. You know, what are the odds? Yeah, and it was a horrible moment of silence.
You dug your way out of it.
Well, I just said, all right, I'll just do my cancer stuff now.
Nobody has cancer, thank God.
Well, that cancer's like a little more accessible.
My whole family died of cancer. Sure. Yeah, everybody knows it.
That's right. So you're in Providence. You're like, what kind of life are you living? Your dad's not around.
My dad is up in Massachusetts. My mom had me when she was 18. My dad was much older, so they didn't last long, but. They're cool, you know. I don't think they.
We're in Massachusetts.
He lives in Rehoboth, which is like right on the border of like Rhode Island. It's not, you know, Rhode Island's like 40 square miles or something.
Yeah.
So it's like.
So you're a real New England guy, really?
Yeah, I grew up full New England. Like, I didn't, you know.
Lobster rolls, clam bakes.
Yeah. Stuffies, all that shit. Caw hogs. I mean, like, Family Guy, the cartoon is basically based on my town, and there's all these things, little bits in there, but I'm like, I know what that is.
right.
You know, I think that dude probably went to school out there or something. But
Jimmy's, Fraps, all that.
Yeah, it was New York System Weenies, where this guy, like, builds hot dogs on, like, it'll be, like, right next to his armpit when he's serving you. But people, you know, it's funny. I bring bands through there, like, occasionally. We brought these, like, Aussies, this band Total Control, through there.
And through Rhode Island recently?
No, this was years ago, but it was like showing them little bits of things like, you guys got to try these hot dogs, and then be like...
Oh, before you moved out, you mean?
No, this was after I'd already lived in San Francisco, but like watching like Australians eat like the thing from Providence.
I've
never had anything like this
before. You can have that experience when you go to Australia.
Fight a shark.
So what was the scene? So like, I'm trying to picture what year it would be when you're sort of coming
in
alive.
I moved in like 98, so it was probably like 96.
And the bands coming through from RISD were like who?
At the time, the bands that, when I was young, the first bands I was seeing that were really good out of Providence were like Lightning Bolt, who have been around for fucking ages. There was that band. I mean, there were a lot of bands. There were the Leo brothers, like Ted Leo and Ted.
Ted
Leo was,
and the
his
pharmacist.
Brother Danny Leo was going to school there. So I lived above Danny in a warehouse.
Really?
Yeah, he's great. He does bands still. It was like Arab on Radar, and there was a band called Dung Beetle really early on.
I kind of remember Dung Beetle.
Drop Dead was from Warwick, Rhode Island. One of the biggest like grindcore, hardcore, like political punk bands.
Yeah.
I grew up watching those guys at All Ages shows when I was a kid.
All Ages shows. I hear a lot about those.
Six Figure Satellite.
Thank God for All Ages shows.
Jesus Christ, I wouldn't be sitting
there
right
now. Spawned a whole generation of music guys.
I'd own a bank if it wasn't for like going to see like Phlegm at Club Babyhead when I was 16. Club Babyhead. I can't believe you never performed there. What every band I mentioned.
Like, it was after me. God,
like
I
when I talked to like that guy, Bob Weston from Shellac. I run into him sometimes at festivals. He's a super nice guy.
Yeah.
And somehow like Club Babyhead came up and he had the same reaction. Like he's a little bit older than me, I think. So I had gone to see like a band he was in when I was a kid. And it's the same reaction from everybody. They're like, everybody goes, like they'd forgotten about it. And they're like, Club Babyhead. Jesus Christ. Like everybody's just like, what a shithole. I'm like, yeah, that was like a really small room. Just like a black small box with like the bouncer be like, come on, just like shoving kids in, and then they
little punk rock kids.
I saw like the Cramps there on Halloween one year, or right around Halloween, like
wow.
Yeah, tons of metal bands. There was a place called The Living Room there.
I remember The Living Room.
The Living Room. They probably might have had comedy. They had like Flotsam and Jetsam.
And that was in Rhode Island?
I may have seen Slayer there really early on.
I remember the...
In Providence. Yeah, and then it's moved on to a bigger joint. I don't know if it's still there or not, but...
Because when I was in Boston...
It was real small.
Yeah, when I was in Boston, there was a lot going on musically, and now all those places are gone. Like, there was that whole area down by the Causeway Street where there were lofts, and there were bands that played in the lofts.
Yeah.
And then there was like the Ratskeller was still around, and Storyville and TT the Bears.
All those joints are gone now?
I don't know if TT's are. I think the Middle East is still there.
I remember just going to that joint. And I think I got in like younger than I was supposed to be. So just like standing in the corner the whole time when I was like, I was real young there.
In Somerville? Just Central Square, I think.
Keep my head down and I won't get kicked out of the show. Yeah, like I was like Sebador, like Harry Pussy would be.
Sebador.
They would never play in Providence because it was just a small town. So, I mean, a lot of bands came through Providence.
Like the guys.
We end up in Boston all the time to see shows. I actually was going back to play for the first time in like 7 or 8 years. We're playing in Boston next month.
Yeah.
I'm already getting emails from dudes like, dude, you're fucking dead when you get hit. Like really? Boston Ice just being like, I'm going to rip your face. I'm like a little scared, you know? Like,
why? What are they
about? I mean, it's in a loving way, but you know how Boston can be like,
oh, yeah.
They're like, just like, you fucking quiz. I'm going to come over there.
Very
like,
specific.
Oh,
yeah. So wait, so you were like the first band. So you're going, you're a kid in Providence and you're running around. And Providence is pretty heavy, but I don't know if it cleaned up since. Since I hear it's nicer now.
More mob run when I was a kid.
Right.
Maybe. Or at least back then, more on its sleeve like that. You know?
Yeah.
You'd see the mayor walking down this. Buddy Cianci was the mayor when I was a kid who'd been like convicted, put away like a double felon, and then got out and they reelected him like promptly upon getting out of jail. His daughter used to come to our house and like buy drugs off my neighbor, and like just such a small town that like I remember I never wanted her around because she would party so hard I was afraid she was gonna die at our house, and I was like, if she dies here
we're
dead.
Fucked.
Like I was like, this guy's terrifying, and like, and she was also a very commanding person, so she'd be like, I'm gonna party here, and that was it. You're like, okay, well I'm gonna leave. Like I'd be like, at least I could be like, I wasn't there.
This is the mayor's kid.
Yeah.
That's a horrible feeling when you're partying with somebody and you know they could die and you just don't want to be around.
She scared the shit out of me. She was more friends with my roommate at the time, but I remember being like, dude, this is not a good idea, man. You know, like having like, it's like having like cops at a party. Like, yeah, I don't know. Right. This feels like this could go either way.
Yeah. And that you were already playing by then?
No, man. Like I didn't really play.
You had roommates, so you were out of the house. You were out of your house.
I moved out of my mom's when I was 17. My mom, I had a half brother that she had with another man that was pretty disabled, and like things just got like a little tumultuous. Like there was like, you know, like she needed to take care of my brother, but she still does. So like, but we're cool.
Yeah, you're
me
good.
Me and my mom are tight. Yeah. So
you're out on your own at 17. You're living the life.
Yeah. Like, I just wanted to, you know, basically at the time, I just didn't want to go. I got out of high school. I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to do drugs. And I was selling drugs.
What were the drugs? What were the?
Mostly just like acid and weed. Was like
your acid
thing.
Guy?
Yeah. Like never got in. I never liked drinking when I was a kid, which kept me out of harder drugs. I always felt like the gateway for things like cocaine and stuff would always be like booze, because you'd be like, fuck it, why not? You know, so I got lucky. There was a big wave of heroin that came through Providence, and I somehow got real lucky and didn't get into that. I think I tried it twice and I was like, this isn't, I was like,
I threw up. I didn't
like puking. And I remember being, I was always like more like, let's get this party bumping. And then everybody would be like nodded out. And I'd be like, this shit sucks.
I'm the same way. It was all cocaine, but booze, you know. But acid, you were like
you're a comedian. I can't think of any real junky comedians. It doesn't seem like those.
Oh, there's some.
Yeah. You're sure. Like, there's like, there used to be guys, slower guys.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, the guys, you know how it goes. Those, you know, people learn how to work on that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Professionalism.
Yeah, there was. The real junkies know how to ride it out. But there was a lot of comics that needed to do something before they got on.
I get it's a heavy set, man.
Steve Kravitz used to get off stage and he'd wander around going like, was I on yet?
That's like the highlight of the night right there.
How was I? Well, no, a lot of guys worked pretty, like Mitch Hedberg was pretty heavy.
But he was also the exception of the rule across the board. Like that guy, I always looked at him and been like, this guy's on everything.
Yeah.
He had totally golden.
But it's weird when you listen to his shit, like, you know, the simplicity of it and the sort of childlike innocence to the way he observed things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, heroin definitely, you know, quieted things down for that dude.
I remember the first time I heard him, there was nobody like that guy. He was a total original.
And it holds up. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's weird that it's so rare that comedy holds up, you know, like music. A lot of music.
No, it's totally true, man. Like you hear like Lenny Bruce now, and
you got to get a glossary.
Yeah,
you got to know. You got to put him into context.
It's a totally different time. His anger was from a different place.
Yeah, he mixed Yiddish in, and all the political references were what they were in show business. You definitely need a glossary
like
for Lenny
footnotes
Bruce.
For the comedy.
Fuck yeah, man! If you listen to that Berkeley concert, you're like, hold on, pause it,
stop it again.
The fuck is he talking about?
It's like the Ulysses of comedy.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot like that. So when did you start? Let's talk about the acid though. Like, were you one of those guys that could do it 3-4 times a week?
Yeah, I mean, when we were selling, we were taking it quite a bit. I remember.
Was it good?
Yeah, we were getting blotter mostly from Boston. We would drive up and get off a guy that was supposedly friends with a chemist. You know how it was with
MIT,
that kind of shit.
Was MIT involved?
Yeah, always with that. Anytime I did a new drug, they'd be like, this is called DMT. It's like a naturally occurring substance nearby that this guy, you know,
from
created
MIT,
at a lab.
Yeah.
But the you know, and then acid went away for so long, and now it's making a comeback.
Is it?
Like, I remember, maybe you're of that age now where nobody offers you acid anymore.
I've
but I remember
sober
thinking,
a long
I was like,
time.
Well, yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
I remember thinking like, man, I haven't heard about acid in a long time. And like that day, some guy with like a tie-dye and frizzy hair is like, do you want some doses? And I was like, it's back.
It's back.
Yeah.
Hey, here we go.
Turns out you can intake acid as a 40-year-old man and get away with it, but you just need a good, comfortable place.
Right. But did you do it?
Yeah, I tried. Me and my girlfriend took it in Hawaii. It was really nice.
Yeah.
Hawaii. I mean, come on.
Sure.
You're beach
okay.
in Kauai. Yeah. I was like, this
nothing,
is,
what could go wrong?
Yeah, I wasn't watching TV.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You weren't in a city.
I wasn't in a,
you
at
could
a,
just
at
go
a
outside.
House party at, on Halloween or something.
Not a lot of people talking to you. That could turn
the person I saw, I'm pretty sure, was also on acid. She was like digging through the sand for like 4 hours, and I was like, she's cool, we're fine. She looked over and gave me a thumbs up. I was like, there you go. Wait, you stay over
good
there.
Luck. Yeah, yeah.
Let me know if you find any money.
But wait, what was it, like a 12-hour run?
No, you know, it's funny. Like, I don't know if it's because I'm older, but my metabolism has definitely slowed down. But I remember it being way more of an obligation. But that was across the board with everything.
Right.
So, like, you know, I remember you take acid, and like 9 hours later, you'd be like, all right, already, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Like, how? What is this, an all-day affair?
Let me
like,
down.
I'll never be able to work again. You're having these thoughts like, if this is it, I'm fucked. Like, I can never go home again. And this was like, you know, it was speedier than I remembered, but it was really enjoyable. My girlfriend had never taken it before, and it was really funny to watch her.
What
really
were the mostly? Just, what were the visuals? Just trails and light.
It was actually pretty mild, but she was pretty hilarious. It was like a really perfect day too. Like we'd had really nice days the whole trip, but it was the last day we were there, and it was like one of those like pink sunsets.
Oh yeah,
and it was
like
lasted
what island?
Hours. We're on Kauai.
That's where I go. That's great.
It's fast, super
we just went down there. Like, yeah. Unfortunately, the last time I went down there was right after Trump was inaugurated. So I was pretty sure we were going to be traveling back to just blood in the streets.
You know, Hawaii's been on the right side of history for this whole thing, though.
Yeah.
Those Hawaiians are fighting back, which makes me so sad because Hawaii's got that quality. They're like, fuck that.
But if I, like, because of my brain, if it just goes the wrong way, the idea of being on an island away from everything.
You have to stay there.
You have to stay there. And what could go wrong on an island?
It could
when
be
it
worse.
Turns on
you
itself.
Could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't even think of a bad island.
Most
islands
right.
are pretty good,
I think. They're pretty good. They're pretty. It's beautiful.
That's Kauai's where you go beautiful. In a zombie apocalypse because you got water on all four sides.
Sure. And you hope that the people on the island don't turn zombie. I think that's where my brain always goes right to that. What if these people turn?
Yeah. You just got to go in and clear house. You go in with your machete and sort it
right.
out.
Oh, yeah. How long did you stay down there?
We go down there for like maybe a week or so every.
That's
every
about
year.
It, right?
Yeah.
10 days.
We try
is
and
about
like
it.
Mix it up with places. Like we went to Cuba last year. The year
how was that? Before
have you been down there?
No, man.
It's a trip, man. I've
well, just whenever I have to like avoid American Airlines to get any place, it's sort of like that's a step I don't want to deal
yeah,
with.
Yeah,
you have to go out of Mexico.
No, we actually did it legit early
oh, right
on.
When JetBlue did.
Yeah,
the thing?
We didn't do JetBlue. We did. I can't remember what airline it was now. Probably like United. It was like a bunch of airlines were like dumping
just for
it. It's
a vacation.
Real small, but it was like lots of. Cubans were coming over and like going back with like the I swear to God the plane on the ride back was full of HDTVs like everybody had these like big flat screen like everybody was like finally we can go to the States and get a goddamn flat screen and bring it back home. Like it's crazy the things that you know the things that they have that they
granted.
Do really well there. Yeah, the shit that we have that these people want is like shit that
well what was your experience there? What did you feel?
It was really really hot. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
There are a few things about it that kind of blew my mind. Like one thing in particular I was curious about how music would be there. I know that like you know jazz and Cuban music are very you know from there that's their pride and they obviously do it better than
and
anyone
cigars
else. Yeah cigars yeah
yeah
but the music is crazy. I didn't hear not once any rock and roll or any rap or any radio music from here, no contemporary pop or R&B, nothing, just
bum, 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 bum,
just
bum,
Cuban music bum, and jazz. Yeah, we saw one night an improv band play at a place called Zorro's that was in Havana that was really they were actually amazing. But it was crazy that none of that shit has permeated over there. I've heard stories about like there being punks there.
Yeah.
But it seems like a place that'd be really ripe for that kind of shit to be like...
To really
hey guys,
push it?
This is AC/DC. And they're like, holy shit. And like...
Did you bring some stuff for...
No, I didn't think
kids?
To. Actually, when I was originally going over there, I was like, maybe we could play a show there. And when we left, I was like, we're not playing a show there. I was like, that's just doesn't feel right to me. And I was like, I'll play anywhere but Cuba. I was like, I don't know if they're really... Like, A, I don't know if they... I think they'd probably fucking hate it. Or they'd be like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, I've been starting to get in. I've been getting into jazz lately, and I haven't really hit the whole Cuban thing that much yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely its own thing.
It's really,
that groove
I mean,
is its own
it's
groove.
It's about seeing it live, too, I think. Like, there's a lot of people playing on the streets down there. Like, at night, there was just a parking lot that would have shows. Right now, these guys would bring a PA in.
Yeah.
And it would just be neighborhood people hanging out. I mean, there's like, it's so hot there, and people have so little that once night would fall, people just comes out of their houses and sit on the street. In Havana, in particular, in Havana.
Right.
You know, the city's got really crazy. Like, a building had collapsed, like, a block down the street from where we were maybe, like, a couple months before we were there. And it was just still on the road.
Yeah.
And they just put, like, a couple cones around it, and then people start throwing their trash in it. So it just was this massive trash heap with, like...
Of rubble
but,
and
the
trash.
Other thing that kind of blew my mind about Cuba that was pretty awesome was there, I swear to God, there were pedigree homeless dogs. So there'd be, like, a beagle, like 100% beagle, just fucking filthy with like dreads, just being like, hey, buddy, like, yeah, do you have any snacks? And I'd be like, that's, or
I deserve respect.
Yeah, or like a dachshund. Like, really? I was like, when do you see like a homeless dachshund? Like, that dog's out there fending for itself.
Why do you figure that was?
I have no idea. Huh. I don't know if people brought dogs there back in the day, you know, but I mean, there's a lot of homeless animals there. I mean, people just don't have a lot of money there, so they probably can't really like afford it. They're taking care of their family more than themselves. But you stay kind of in like Casa Particular, which is people's homes. Yeah. So for like $20 a night, you can stay in a nice joint. They have like a bedroom set aside with an AC in it. It's like a real gringo thing.
Did you rent an old car?
No, well, we took old cars from city to city because I loathe taking a bus. Yeah. I don't know, it's like a weird affliction I have where I can't get on the bus.
Buses are a little sad.
It's, you've got to be either you're either bus person or you're not. I can fly, I can take a canoe, but for some reason the bus has always been like, I'm like, nah, I'm cool, man. Really? But we would take a
canoe down the coast.
It'd be like $100 to take a cab for like 6 hours. Yeah. You know, he'd like drive you to the next city. And then the two times we did that, it was a guy with like an old 50s car that was like totally refurbished, but their style.
Uh-huh.
And they're like manufacturing their own parts, you know, like they're not like outsourcing any of this shit. They're making everything there.
Well, so they
like,
had to.
It's amazing. Yeah, exactly. Right. That's exactly the story of that whole place is the necessity has driven them to where they are, you know, like the things they make and they're good at. But the dude would drive us to the city. And then he'd be like, when are you going back? And we'd be like, oh, we're going back in like 3 days. He'd be like, you know what, fuck it, I'll hang out. And he's like, just call me in 3 days. I'd be like, you're just going to hang out in this other city? He's like, I got friends here. Like, people are really chill.
Don't
there.
Keep the meter running.
Yeah, I'd be like, don't do it on my account. We could just catch another car. He's like, nah, you know, my ex-girlfriend's here. I'm cool.
So he was willing to wait for $100.
Two separate guys just came and they're like, ah, fuck it, I'll drive. They would, they would cab around that city for a few days. You know
I
mean?
Get it. Yeah, yeah.
Because like, so it kind of works everywhere.
So when you start like playing in Providence, what are you playing?
What clubs you mean?
Well, no, like what music?
Oh, back in the day.
Yeah.
Because
it seems like you've moved through a lot of stuff, and it seems that to me the album, not the last one, but the one right before the last one, Weird Exits. Like it seems like the production is a little cleaner, and like you've like kind of fully integrated everything you've worked towards into it.
Yeah, it's been a slow crawl to like getting to this like area of like incorporating all the inspirations.
Like there's some noise, there's some psych, there's a little punk, but the lyrically it's different. The singing sounds cleaner.
Just
and
moving ahead a little bit every time.
But the production's different, right? Am I wrong?
That was Chris Woodhouse's last record that he did with us, and
you've been with him for years.
Yeah, me and him worked together for a long time, and he's just gotten, I mean, it's just like in anything, somebody who's gifted will, you know, in a perfect scenario, get better at what they do. So he was getting better and better and better at recording, almost to a fault at points where like I would always be pushing back and be like, let's just
dirty it up a little.
Yeah, just and he'd be like, oh, like come just see him like being bummed out. I'd be like, come on, man.
I'm figuring this out.
Stop dragging me back. Save that for your pop project, you know, but at the same time, it made for clarification and things. And also, I think it helps with us get a little bit out to a wider audience because not everybody's into like real like face banger.
Well, that's the weird thing. Like even if I talk to Ty and then I talk to who else do you know? Cronin, I talked to.
I went to some older guys with both those guys. We went to Medieval Times last night.
What is that?
So I've had crazy medieval diarrhea all morning.
From with that?
No,
with
don't eat those? Medieval Times. Is all I'm saying.
I would never. Is that a theme place?
Yeah, it's like you know knights in armor and shit.
Sure.
And fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was Charlie Moothart from Ty's band's birthday.
Oh, so and that's where you went?
Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing because both of them when they were kids and they both looked up to you and they both went very different directions because like when I...
Oh, yeah,
like
everybody's branching out from the center of
well,
this
Cronin,
thing,
it's like he makes pop records, really.
Yeah.
I mean, they're clean and they're produced like that. They're layered.
That's
they got
his
hooks.
Aesthetic, you know?
Right. And Ty does everything that Ty does, right?
Ty's very much his own thing.
Right, but I think he definitely took your template of how to engage in music.
It was like San Francisco was really thriving at that exact moment, so everybody was sort of like pulling inspiration.
Yeah, I missed that whole thing.
We got really lucky at that time because there were just so many, I mean, there's still a lot of great shit happening in Oakland and the Bay Area in general, but at that time, there was just like everybody was doing a band.
All different kinds of music.
Yeah,
well, let's get to there through like, but the art rock element, like when you say that early on you were playing at Mass Art and that some of the noise stuff that you use, like that world of music, it was totally inaccessible, really, except to like a core group of weirdos.
The more alienating it was, the more interested I was in it when I was a kid.
And that's how you started doing that kind of stuff?
But I also have always had a real pop aesthetic myself, so like I'd like try and like make a poppy version of this like... Yeah. You know, like I loved metal, but my favorite metal bands were always ones that had hooks, like Iron Maiden or some shit.
Sure.
That's still very poppy, you know, you're like, fucking, like
you're a metal kid?
Yeah, super into metal, I mean, I went to see all the metal shows when I was... I don't know if it was out of what was available to me, but that was a lot of the all-ages shows were metal and punk shows.
Right.
And I skateboarded, which I sucked
at. And at that time, they had sort of come together in a weird way.
All that shit, like skaters were like handing out tapes and shit. Right. Even
but metal and
early
punk.
Rap as well. Like yeah, lots yeah. like Public Enemy got really huge in like the young white crowd in Providence, uh-huh. you know, like shit like
so you remember
like
that.
Reaching over
yeah, yeah.
you know, boundaries and stuff.
So what was the first, band?
My first band was called Krang, and it was with this guy, Jeff Rosenberg, who later did a band called Pinka Brown with me. That was the first band I did when I lived in San Francisco. That was a duo. But me and him played with, like, one of the guys from Lightning Bolt was in that band for a while. This girl, Kara Hyde, who I think, she did a band called V for Vendetta years later. Like, they all kind of went on to do their own things and moved all over the country.
Yeah.
But that was kind of like a guitar, angular guitar, poppy rock band. That was, like, my first foray into... not just playing in my basement, but playing live and learning. And
playing guitar. You were playing guitar.
Playing guitar, yeah. yeah. And then I started playing for about a year. I played in a band called Landed out there. That was yeah. like Vermiform. That was sort of more experimental. Those guys are actually still playing every now and then.
Vermiform?
Vermiform, which was this band, Men's Recovery Projects label.
Yeah.
Who were real, like, total weirdos. Like, original all the way. Like, they're all really funny and great and talented guys. And
like, what's a point of reference?
Sam McPheeters, who's the guy who actually ran Vermiform back in the day, is around down here now. I think he lives in Southern California yeah. still. And he is mostly these days doing like writing and art, I think.
Yeah.
But he still does bands too. He's just like one of those guys, like a jack of all trades, but also comes from like the Smell school and like that kind of vibe of like all ages punk, cheap, but
right.
also like,
but not like complete
political as well,
right?
You know?
But lyrical, not complete noise or art.
Not
music.
Noise. No, it's like he had other bands too, like but I mean, he always it was political, but not noise. No, it was like and sort of tongue in cheek too. Like those guys had a lot of comedy in their bands.
Yeah,
like they
yeah.
would dress up like really ridiculous and
sure.
shit. It was always a different show. Like he would show up one time. He showed up and read the whole proclamation. Abraham Lincoln dressed uh-huh. as Lincoln,
right?
You know,
right, right.
And bored the shit out of a punk crowd. I watched him do like he had like a scroll. And he's like, and then the and like people are like, the fuck is happening? And then the band played.
But that like, if you talk to Mike Watt and some of those other dudes,
dude, that guy's awesome.
He's the best.
Yeah,
he's
nice
got his
guy.
Own language. Great guy.
That dude is moving like at the fucking speed
yeah.
of light at all.
But
times.
Like what they call punk rock as a style was not what punk rock was when it was used as a genre term. Punk mm-hmm. rock just it kind of was an umbrella term for anything outside the norm,
yeah.
anything arty, anything
it's like
weird.
Extending themselves.
Yeah,
the
because
first
if
time.
You listen to the Minutemen, that's not like what you would call punk rock if you heard today.
No.
But that was what punk rock was. It was just dudes
just
doing
original.
Whatever the fuck they want. Exactly.
Yeah. yeah.
That was the essence.
It wasn't so much a sound as an aesthetic.
Right.
It seems like, you know what I mean?
So you kind of came up in that.
Just
what
a guy,
was left
a,
of that?
Guy, a regular looking. Like you see some of those old punk bands. It always blows my mind when you see like the weirdest. I can't even think of one to reference right now, but you see like. The one of the weirder punk bands, then you see a picture of them and they're just like fucking dudes that
regular
have like
dudes.
Factory jobs. And you're
sure.
like, this is like what they did when
yeah.
they drank beer was to play these punk songs.
Exactly.
In particular, I guess Mike Watt and those guys, you know, it's like those
yeah.
dudes were a bunch of blue collar looking
just dudes.
Not
and the music is in it's hard to explain the Minutemen, those records. They're great.
They're a unique band and nobody ever really sounded it's like them, you got like Per Ubu, like these bands are you're like
Per Ubu.
What is
where
this?
Is that
you know,
coming
yeah.
from?
Yeah.
But they seem to have launched a lot of like Per Ubu, that
oh,
kind
all
of,
those bands made a million it's like what is it? People was it I forget who made the famous quote about the Velvet Underground. It was like maybe Eno or somebody
yeah.
who's being like, yeah, nobody liked this band back in the day, but everybody that ever heard them made a band.
Right.
Like all these people hear this shit, and that's kind of what it was for, was just like liquid inspiration.
But like Pure Ubu, doesn't that lead, am I wrong, to TV on the radio in a way?
You think sound-wise?
Yeah.
I could see that a bit, like really reaching for it vocals.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that Per Ubu is just, they're like a weird
and
bird.
And that dude's
on
still own. Around,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's still playing shows as far as I know. I don't know. My bass player said he... was working at Amoeba when they did an in-store, and he said it was really... Actually, yeah, they are still playing, because I met the drummer recently.
But he's got to be my age, man.
But
he's
said
be...
he said the guy was totally cool. He was told by his handler not to look him in the eye. And Tim, my bass player, is like a real subdued, chill dude. He's like, hey, he told me not to look him in the eye. He's like, I'm
he
still,
seems like he might be
freaked out by
a little like spectrum dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a little
like
in a different
Beefheart
world.
Or something, just like a commanding a band, and everybody's like a little bit freaked out by it. Or like Marky Smith, you know, you get that guy that's like... This is my 30th drummer, and the drummer's like, I don't know how long I'm going to be here for. You know, like, I am definitely, like, I'm friends with Mark Riley now, who was in the Fall at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've met Marky Smith a bunch of times from playing with him back in the day. We were label mates.
Yeah.
And they're both awesome dudes, but like to hear...
He's the main guy in the Fall?
Marky Smith was the main guy who like just like has like...
I've got like four of their records
because Ty was like... Notoriously trashed his bandmates and shit. Like if you read his biography, it's just like a shit-talking manifesto. You're like, what the fuck, dude? But Mark Riley talking about him, being like, I was like, hey, can you put me in touch with Mark again? I haven't seen him in a long time and I want to like send him something. And Mark Riley was like, he's like, that dude doesn't talk to me anymore. I was like, all right. He's like, very rare. It'd be very rare if that dude got touched.
What was it about them that was so important?
They're much like the bands we were just talking about. Like, nobody sounded like them. And if they did sound like them, they were ripping them off. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just one of those bands that like, completely original.
Like, they're those bands that like Ty likes, like Pink Fairies, Chrome, Hawkwind.
Those are all bands that were innovators in those sounds. You know what I mean? Like, Hawkwind. Who the fuck sounded like Hawkwind, but Hawkwind? Same thing with Motorhead. Like, Lemmy split off from them.
Yeah.
Motorhead was the fastest, hardest band. You know what I mean? The band. Like, they these were all original things.
Pioneers, astronauts.
They were like the grandfathers of these like subgenres that are branching off ever.
Like the subgenres that you guys draw from krautrock and all that stuff. Like I kind of knew like someone years ago when I was young said you got to listen to Can, and I remember I had the tape when I was maybe in my 20s, and I'm like I can't get there.
It's
like,
the only thing I'll never get sick of. I don't know what it is about that.
Well,
band.
Now I'm into
I
it.
I still can listen to fucking records over and over and over again. I have to like stop myself and like go on to. I have to be like, oh no, listen to Black Sabbath for a month.
Right. The same guy gave me Eisenstadt and Neubauten and that kind of it was like there was
somebody who was like, just try everything.
You gotta get out there.
This is raw horse. This is crab genitals. You're like, all right, fuck it. I'll just eat it all.
Exactly. Yeah. And I
those are all acquired
handle.
Tastes, what you just described. Your buddy's like, oh, this is anchovies.
But I had an open mind to it because when I was younger, I mean, I could walk into the Residents. I could walk into Eno. I could walk into Fred Frith, John Hassell, that first wave of arty fuckers.
Yeah.
But like I at the beginning, I just couldn't wrap my brain around it until fucking Lance and Ty, and this is recent. But they're like for
me. There's a resurgence. All these LPs are coming back. People are actively searching out these records, and you know, records cost $40 a pop now. Like
some of them, And Dan over at Gimme Gimme, he gets me into the sort of like the more the quieter shit that of that the new records that no one had ever heard before by bands that were just never made it.
You gotta love those guys who are like
curators,
guys and girls are just like hunters.
Yeah.
Like, I walk into Permanent all the time. Lance will totally fuck me over.
Yeah.
Because I'll walk in just to say hi and be like, I'm not buying anything. And he'll be like, oh, but dude. And he'll be like, wait. Oh, yeah, and he'll pull up like two things from the counter. He's like, just listen to him. That's all. It's like the guy giving you your first taste of smack. He's like, just smell it. Yeah. Just have a whiff.
And
you know?
You know what, dude? It always sounds better in the store.
Yeah. Actually, now I'm of that age where if I like it in the store, I like it at home. I finally know what the fuck I like.
So when you started, you're just playing straight up like metal-y punk? Or...
No, I mean, it was really still pretty poppy. It took me a long time to get...
No covers?
No. Although, I think when I was a kid, I would have scoffed at that, but now I love a cover band. I swear to God, like I saw, years ago, I saw a Pink Floyd cover band, and I fucking enjoyed the shit out of it. When the fuck am I going to see Pink Floyd doing like early 70s Pink Floyd? And they had a light show, and the guy had Rototoms. They were playing like Dark Side of the Moon. It was great.
Did it.
I'm into all that shit. I like all those classic rock bands and stuff. But, you know, my friend did a David Bowie cover band called Blowy years ago that was terrible but really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like six dudes sort of half-heartedly learning Bowie songs and then just like a guy in his underwear running out in the crowd. But it was like kind of like a punk version. But it was really, I love that shit, you know?
So when do you, like, so how many bands are you in before you, like, make the leap and, like, go west?
Well, that was the funny thing. It was in Providence.
And did you do records? Are there records around that
the
you can get?
The first record I was on, I guess, was with Landed on Vermiform, Sam McPheeters' label. It was a 10-inch. That was the first vinyl. Oh, actually, no, that's not true. I did, before that, I was doing OCS, the original version of OCS, but that was just noise.
Yeah.
So I was doing, like, homemade instruments and shit like that, or, like, electronics.
What was that called?
It was called OCS. That was, like, the original version of OCS, which was, like, the phonetic.
And what drove you to noise?
Like I said, when I was a kid, like anything that was more alienating, like that was like, it was like in my mind, the obvious next step from punk and metal was to go into like hard noise. And I remember the first time I saw like Japanese noise bands like Masana came over and played in Boston at the Playhouse,
which
was like a totally inappropriate venue for this Japanese noise guy. There was like 30 people there, but seeing this guy do his thing live was so exciting to me. And Just and original just, again. Like it was like post music kind right. of in my mind, being like so not you, even music concrete, but just like really aggressive. Like this guy was like he ran on the crowd and was like throwing tables at the crowd and was actually a little bit scary and like
so it's probably like writing
I
want to
fucking do that.
Performance
you know?
Art.
Yeah, yeah, performance and also like also, there's like all those stories about those guys in Japan in particular, there's a huge wave of this noise yeah. music early on. Yeah. There's like was it Hana Tarash maybe like or was it I can't remember who it was, but somebody like drove like a like got a bunch of people in a room and then drove a bulldozer through the wall while like everybody was like waiting yeah. for the performance right. to start like sure. terrorizing yeah. the yeah. crowd.
The bulldozer.
That was really
that's usually
to
a,
me
that should I, be a closer.
Yeah, somebody should have died.
Wanna,
yeah.
You don't want to open the
that
show.
That wasn't the opening band. Now the opening band was just a guy with just a guy doing throat singing. But you know that was punk to me was like
but you knew like you must have known then like was there did you feel like there was an affectation to it because like you're a very skilled player and you're a skilled songwriter at this point
not at the but time I know no, but I like sucked back then
but did you think you were gonna pull back from that or that was it for you
no I always wanted to do different shit yeah. Early on like I played with like hippie dudes I played with guys just making beats I mean I never really gave a shit I was always into playing with whoever wanted to play it didn't matter where you were coming from or who you were like I love that's what we've been getting back into but trying to get more back into the root of it that's why things are getting jammier with us live and stuff is because when I was a kid especially with guitar and like synthesizers when yeah. I first started playing we would just jam it was right. just and it was really a lot of it was about doing drugs I'm not gonna lie it was like right. doing drugs to hang out and make music to do drugs
right
too you know what I mean right like the Spaceman 3 vibe was totally on point where you just get high to make a song to listen to when you get high next time is very
that's Jay Spaceman's
yeah
manifesto.
It's fucking genius it's like yeah. I mean it's maybe a bit shallow but it's fucking true so you gotta give it a little bit
they
of
made some good records
hey man.
Man
that guy's still around like spinning records wearing a hockey jersey like
I powerful do you man. Know him
I've met them a couple times like I met Sonic Boom I think and yeah we've played festivals with like those dudes do varying projects I'm not super familiar I'm not gonna lie
yeah well, he did that one. He did a Record Store Day release with that Kid Millionaire, that drummer.
Oh, that guy's amazing.
Yeah,
Jay Kid Millions.
Kid Millions, yeah.
Yeah, he's from Oneida, who yeah. were fucking fantastic back in the day. A great, super underrated band.
Yeah, and that, really that record's pretty wild. The
I saw them in
records.
Providence. They yeah. kind of blew my mind. Yeah, that band, they had like a huge American flag that they, it looked like they'd stolen it from like a car dealership. Yeah. It was like 100 feet across.
Right.
And they set that up, and then the singer was like, climbing on it and like ripping shit off the ceiling of this club in Providence and uh-huh. I just remember being like holy and then watching that drummer just like lay it down like non-stop that dude's a machine
yeah,
he's a badass
yeah. no,
he played for one time at a festival he did a thing where he played drums for 10 hours straight
oh my god
yeah they're like he's still playing and I was like I'll go see him in 6 hours I was like I don't need to fucking be there for the whole thing
I want to see when it loosens
it's like
up
watching Sting you start... fuck you're like I don't have all day like I'll can you call me 20 minutes before it's over and I'll come
yeah,
see get, the end
yeah I want to see the closer yeah the money shot
yeah yeah just like a one China symbol
Onada was the name
Oneida
yeah that was the band.
Really good live. Oneida. Yeah, he played in that. And it was like him, an organ player, really nice dudes, nerdy New York.
Yeah.
Like but, good New York music. Like yeah. New York should, in my opinion, always have
a couple of
the
those
strongest
bands.
Shit because it's New York. It's where the Velvets came from. Yeah, so many bands. Yeah, and yeah. then, like, you know, you I want wonder. New York to be like, fucking, that's where everybody should be making music where you're like, what is this?
Is that happening anymore?
I don't want to say. I mean, I will say what I like there is very strong. But mm-hmm. I have, it's only because I have such high expectations of New York, you know,
the mythology of New York.
Yeah, exactly. That city is romanticized, but it is like I love going there, and just walking down the street in the fucking snow.
It's still
and you're like,
good, yeah.
Like
yeah.
if I could have the wherewithal to live there, I'd be like, I would love to make music here. You know, like
yeah, just to have that backdrop. But I don't think it's the same city anymore.
Well, it's just like most cities in America now are being sold. You know, like,
no doubt. You know, and I don't even know who lives in New York anymore. And you were in San Francisco at the end of it.
Yeah, San Francisco. Really? I mean, I lived in a house for 9 years that was one of the best parts of my life and then had to move into a house I loathed for the last 2 years in a neighborhood I didn't want to be in
well,
living
so,
with people I wasn't excited to live with you
so
know?
You do the Noise record when do you move there when do you go to San
I moved Jose? To SF in when I was 23 so it was in September I think it was like September 12th 1998
and what was
like,
the first record there Cool Death of Island Raiders
no it was I was doing a band called Pink and Brown
and Brown did, where's yeah. that name come from why that name
just a terrible idea that came to fruit like it's like every now and then you come across an idea you're like not a good idea but I'm gonna do it anyway and it was just me and this dude in lycra bodysuits
we were
in disguise yeah it was actually really fun and we played for like a year and nobody gave a shit and then we broke up and put out the record and then we came back to play a show and suddenly there were like 300 people at the first show and like,
Pink and Brown
yeah you can look up some videos it's pretty fun shit
lycra suits
yeah disgusting so you're still like, I take it off soaking one thing and I put it in a bag and then take it out the next day and it would make everybody gag around me and I put it on and like the crowd would just move away
so it's still not a crowd pleaser
very hard to describe. I mean, I always remember being shocked that there were women at the show. I'd be like, what are you doing here? She'd be like, I think I walked in the wrong room. Is there like something less disgusting in the next room over? You know, she's like, now just drop her drink on the floor and walk the fight. But like a lot of chin scratching dudes would be like, I felt like the Tonight Show was pretty okay.
Oh, sure, those guys.
We had a lot of those dudes who liked us.
Yeah, yeah.
But our fans were cool.
Were you doing, was that noise or was it?
It was noisy rock. It was like art rock. It was a two-piece. And it was like, you know, we toured with, we did tours
a guitar
with
and a keyboard?
Just guitar and drums.
Just guitar and drums. That seems hard to me.
Actually, it was super simple. I mean, the band was, we never did a reunion show really. But
who was
like,
the other guy?
Jeff Rosenberg.
Oh, Rosenberg,
who's
yeah.
He's in Lavender Diamond here and Day Long Valley of the Nile. He's played with a bunch of bands over time. He's old school too. He's like, me and him played at The Smell a bunch really early on. Like, the only joint that would give us a show in Los Angeles would be The Smell. So we played there fucking over and over and over again. But like, those kids were the people that came to our show. So it made perfect sense, you know?
So why San Francisco? What made you go there?
It's just a beautiful place, man. I mean, I still love San Francisco.
But there was no music out there that
No,
drew
there
you?
Was a ton of. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, there was Deerhoof, have been killing it for like well over two decades now, I think. Like, I saw Deerhoof play at Four Thunder in Providence. As a noise band, pretty much, with different members. This guy Rob Fisk, who moved up to Alaska,
right?
And now they're sort of more like avant pop stuff. But they killed me when I saw them. There's a band called the Deep Throats that I got to do a sort of post death of the band record for that came out 15 years after they made it. Recently, with Castleface put it out. They were like a sort of tranny, really, really like angular. Filthy fucking punk band. They were great. Really like just balls. Fucking balls all day. I remember I saw them the first time on Mushrooms and just was like looking at the singer being like, what is happening right now? Like just to have my ass handed to me. It was on the show, the show was on the street.
Yeah.
And it was also Chris Johansson used to be in the band, who's the painter who lives here back and forth here in Portland. Now he's doing really well with painting. He was playing bass in the band, so that's how I met all those guys.
Yeah.
But that band was fucking good. Like they were one of those bands when I was young in San Francisco that I went to go see. Every time they played, I would go see that band. And then because of that, all their friends' bands were really good. Like that, so they had like sort of like a gender-bending crowd, but very just a unique thing to San Francisco at the time. It was like a really just a dirty-ass, like sexy punk, shitty, fucking like lots of saxophones and shit. You're like, fucking, who's bringing saxophones? Right, like we are, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
X-Ray Specs, like all that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Those bands were totally inspiring and like, but like when I first went there, I didn't see any music. I saw one band called Melee, like a grindcore band from Chicago at a club, and the club was a shithole.
What year did you go there?
That was in like 97. I drove out to San Francisco. We went and checked out Austin.
I just left. I was there in 93, 94, and I wasn't seeing much music.
It's. I think what happened was it comes in waves very much to San Francisco. Like right now, there's maybe a bit of a lull just because of the bullshit people have been doing. With. Like a lot of people have moved to the East Bay.
Right.
Or to, you know, at as you necessity. Know, tons of people have moved to Los Angeles. Yeah. Like I was able to buy a house here. Whereas up there, like I got kicked out of four houses that went for sale because I couldn't fucking buy them.
Yeah.
You know, just I was too strung out or too stupid to realize I probably could have gotten a mortgage, but as to whether I would have paid it or not was debatable.
But the scene seemed like, so you get there in 97, you're not really going out and watching, but you're playing?
I wasn't playing right out of the gate. I went and got the first thing I did when I got there was sleeping on my friend's back porch. I went out and got a job and an apartment that week. The first job I had was working for just an obnoxiously high, I did a lot of construction and painting in Providence before I left to make money, and I learned how to paint and cook and shit, so I was able to do all the menial jobs and that kind of shit. So I got a painting gig hooked up by my old boss in Providence. Set me up with a painting gig in San Francisco. It was a company called The Experts that was run by a guy named Ian, this old British guy. And
so you got planted, you got a job.
Got a job. Yeah. I was making okay money, but I had to be up at like 6 a.m. As you can tell by looking at me, I'm not real early. You wanted to do this at 10. I said, how about noon? Like, that's how I roll. Just that's how I've made my life, so I don't have to wake up at 6 unless I want to. But I painted, and then me and Jeff started a band, and I didn't even want to do the band with him because me and him had already done it. I was kind of a cunt about it.
Which, Jeff Rosenberg?
Jeff Rosenberg, we did Pink and Brown together.
Yeah.
And then I guess I did like a slew of smaller bands over the years, just like little side projects, but Coach Rips and OCs were the other two main ones I did while I was in San Francisco, you know?
Yeah. And so when did you start playing? When did you start getting into this scene? Because it seemed like it was...
pretty quickly.
But like, it seemed like there was a lot of different strains of music going on. I
mean, there was a lot of metal in San Francisco at the time too. Yeah, I mean, San Francisco.
But also, there was some real hippie, you know, retro kind of like folky, yeah, weirdo.
That
music.
Was sort of after I moved there. Like that, we call that the Coke folk, like, or like Leather Feather, like that kind of, like, you know, like, wow, man, like Sequoia's having a party at her house tonight, and like, you know,
who are those bands?
Fuck, I don't know any of their names, but I mean, that was an era of San Francisco that became really popular. A lot of bands came out of that. There's a lot of, one thing that was cool about that is people were getting back to the root of just having one person play an acoustic guitar and sing, which
right.
I'm all about. Like,
but was that where Newsom came from, Joanna?
Joanna Newsom, I guess she did live in San Francisco. She yeah. was always, I mean, her harp playing is incredible.
Yeah, was the Fleet Foxes, were they Bay
They're
Area
out of the Northeast, the Northwest, rather. They're in like, I think they're Seattle, maybe. But like San Francisco, yeah, Joanna Newsom, like that kind of shit. Like yeah. that became very big there. But that was long after I'd already been there for a while. Like,
oh, really?
We were more in like the...
You were already a veteran?
Connected with like the noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a veteran. Yeah. So that was like when that shit was happening, that was like when I was doing my most drugs. So when you ask me band's names, I'm like, I have no fucking idea.
Yeah, right, right.
I remember just like muckling a friend of mine to keep him from yelling out at the show. Like I was like, shh, you can't yell. It's a guy playing a guitar. He's like, I'm gonna fuck this up. Like dragging my buddy out. I'm like, what's wrong with you? He's like, I don't know. It made me mad. Like,
so just, you guys were the sweaty, kind of like drugged up punk
always,
dudes.
Always, yeah. I definitely had that vibe of like somebody would like get on an elevator and one would like clutch your purse a little bit. And I'd be like, come on, really? Like, no interest in your shit, lady. But I get it. Like, then I would catch a glimpse of myself and I'd be like, oh, she's totally right.
So that's where the OCs really came into form, was there?
OCs, yeah. Like, OCs was originally... it was this guy, Patrick Mullins, who just actually came out to work with me a little bit here. He lives in Vermont now. But it was me and him... basically getting high and just playing music together, but like we wanted to do something quiet because I just finished this band called Coach Whips that was really aggressively noisy.
Yeah, how many did you do records?
Coach Whips did I think 3 or 5 records. Yeah, it was like it was pretty garage rock. It was guitar, 2 drums, and a little Casio keyboard. It was me and a girl. She played maracas and uh-huh. stuff, and I had 2 sets of bands throughout that band.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do something really mellow, so OCs kind of started as this like project, literally just acoustic guitar, a microphone, and a guy playing, like singing saw, he plays saw, and like a snare drum and a kick drum, that'd be, uh-huh. or a floor tom, rather.
That was it?
Yeah, it was really simple. And then he made homemade electronics, so he'd have like drones going and stuff. So it sort of hit on
that thing,
freak folk thing you're talking yeah. about, except we were definitely like...
That was just you taking
Instead
a break.
Of, we were like smoking meth and yeah. then going out and playing the quietest songs we could, you know, and like something about speed was always really funny to me where like people would get really high and then talk really quietly. And like that'd be like, I'd be like, this is totally perfect. Get super high and then not be able to talk loud at all anymore. We'd write some really quiet, tiny songs. And
while your brain's on fire.
Yeah, I don't even know. Just like laying there breathing through your mouth all night like a goblin. Fucking, it was just, but because of that, it's incorporated over time more and more members and yeah, the yeah. music changed and now we're at this rock and roll show kind of, you know.
Well, where did you meet Ty and those guys?
Ty,
they must have been like 12.
I think he was 19 when I met him, and he or 18 or 19, he yeah. it was just random. Like I had heard about a show that was happening at, I think Danger House Records or whatever the fuck it was called. It was like a little tiny record store and like sort of on the edge of the Outer Mission. That was like a punk record store that literally like you'd be flipping like Crass Record, cheap Blondie record, you know,
right.
like
yeah, just, yeah.
but only things that would be classified as punk kind of.
Where did you live? In the Mission?
I lived at that time in the Lower Haight, which is where I had my really good stretch of San Francisco with this amazing.
Was Naked Eye still there?
Yeah, Naked Eye. I know Steve.
Sure.
Yeah, Steve. Every day watching that fucking guy go and buy a pint of ice cream, just eating ice cream, but being like.
I used to go in there all the time when I lived there.
So my neighbors all worked, my downstairs neighbors all worked at Naked Eye. There was Miles.
Miles?
So Miles was my old neighbor for
nine.
I lived above Miles.
Miles
for
was like
years.
The classic video nerd.
Miles used to tell me, you remind me of a young you. And I'd be like, fuck you. Like, say. But I always remember being like, he's a good looking guy, so I can't take that as.
But he used to sit there behind the counter with his glasses.
He had like tinted glasses and like blonde flippy hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Completely like.
Miles was my buddy who I lived above for 9 years.
Oh, wow.
He would let us. We would have full on rock shows in our apartment with like people getting fucked up on the street and like the cops would come and Miles would be like, I'll go talk to the cops. He was super cool. And he would come up to the show and be like, just like, I'm going to talk to girls.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He has no interest in me. He's like, yeah, thanks for having a show. I'm going to go talk to that girl. And yeah. then the cops would come and be like, you let me deal with this.
Yeah.
And he'd be like over there, like flipping his hair on the cop. Be like, oh, thanks a lot, Miles. Okay, well, keep them in line, you know, like of that age where the cops are like, "This, what are you, the dad?"
Yeah, the hipster grown up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember Miles because I used to, because when I was doing comedy there, I didn't have nothing to do. I was living on South Van Ness. It was
South Van Ness on 18th next to the Whizburger for a while.
I was right there, like at 22nd, 23rd.
I've lived all over that city.
Yeah, and I was living with this hippie couple who owned the house, and we had the
They still own that joint. They're probably worth a few million.
I hope so. Terry, I don't know if, I wonder if he's still alive. He wasn't the healthiest dude. But but yeah, and there was just nothing to do. I'd go to Muddy Waters, I'd get jacked, or I'd go to Horseshoe a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that weird, huge dude? He used to wander around, kind of crazy guy. I forget his name, but he would show up at rock shows too. He was like a giant, but he was a little, maybe he was already gone. I can't fucking remember his name, but he was always around. But I used to love the Horseshoe, that brown sugar and coffee business where they just have that fucking brown sugar.
Clumped. You have to like knock it on the counter. That's very San Francisco too.
Yeah, the pints of coffee, man. Yep. Just getting jacked.
Yeah, Muddy Waters is, as far as I know, Muddy Waters is still there. And there's still a guy behind the counter being like, "You can't fucking shoot up in here, dude." Like, just being like that place was always a place where you go in and they'd have free internet, but there'd always be like, you go to use the toilet and it'd be like a blue light bulb and like a combination code to get
right,
in.
Exactly, in the back. Yeah. And I was there when the internet happened, where it was like, it was before email and shit. Mm-hmm. You could go sit in coffee shops and be, you know, have conversations with dudes at other coffee shops. And that was it. That was the beginning of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now look where we are.
That doesn't happen anymore, man.
No, nope. Nobody, you can do it right from your house. But so you built the band though, right? I mean, after the Casio and the drones, I mean, you made a rock band at some point. Oh, we were talking about Ty. So you saw Ty.
So I went to this show. This is actually pretty funny. I went to the show. I didn't know who Ty was. I don't know if I'd heard about his band, or maybe I went to see his band specifically. It was this band called Traditional Fools that he still does reunions with. It's one of his buddies. But I went there and they were just really fucking good. It was like pretty straight garage, which is not something I go search out anymore. But they did it really well. The ceiling was like, I'd be walking and my hair would be brushing the ceiling. That's how low it was. Like, literally a basement with like a dirt floor and like crushed beer cans. This band was playing and he had a broken hand with a cast on and he had stuffed a drumstick into the hole and was playing drums with the cast with like this cheesy stick sticking out. And I was just like, this kid's a badass. And then we talked. And then I saw him after that do a solo. He started off doing solo sets where he just play guitar and play foot drums.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And it was just really good. And we started talking. I took him to a bar to talk to him about doing a record, his first record as himself. And his buddy came in with me. And then Ty was like, "Hey, can you just grab his ID and bring it back out and give it to me?" And I was like, "How old are you?" And I gave him his buddy's ID, who looked fucking nothing like him, like a tall blonde guy with short hair. And I gave Ty the ID, and we walk in, and the guy at the door looks at the ID, and then he looks at Ty, and then he looks at me, and he's just like, "Asshole." And then just let him go in, and he's like, "Whatever, dude." Like, we had known each other from me going to that bar, but I was like, "Sorry, dude." He's like, "You fucking bringing a kid here? Like, your nephew?"
And you talked to him?
Yeah, and we made the first record. He was actually the second record that I put out on Castleface after the only other one I'd done before that was my own. So me and this guy, Brian Lee Hughes, who started the label together, put out Ty's first record. And now it's me and this guy, Matt Jones, doing it years later. And
you put out a few of his records, right?
We put out Ty's very first solo record.
And you did one with him and Cronin?
No, we didn't do that. That was In the Red, I think.
Yeah.
And we did a 7-inch. I think that's it, really.
Yeah. Did you play with him?
We toured with Ty a lot. Ty opened up for us early on when he was doing a solo show. We did a whole month together. We played a slew of shows together. Every year now we've been doing a charity gig together where like me and him would play a show and switch headlining slots for some local charity in LA or some shit, you know.
So you guys are still tight and it's good. He was around here too,
I was
too,
at
right?
the Medieval Times with him last night, man.
And Cronin,
I watched him scream at a guy with a lance, which I thought was pretty ballsy. We were fans of the Yellow Knight, it turns out.
But so what is do you make money at the label?
The label makes money off of OC's records and like King Gizzard, we put out some of their shit, and Ty, like, and White Fence perhaps.
Yeah.
Like, some of the bigger stuff does, and some of the smaller records break even and make a little bit of money too. It's tricky, you know, I mean, it's just a tricky business, but we have a high output. We're putting out like two things a month, so.
So that's like you're really in it. You're making records and you're putting
records
out.
Tons of records, yeah. My partner is a real workaholic too, so he loves the business end of it, but I've been pushing on him, maybe we need to pump the brakes a little bit so we can actually stop losing all the money that my band makes the label and putting it out on records that aren't necessarily making money. And it just seems like a bad business choice, you know?
But it's like, it's interesting that there was a period there where, you know, before CDs sort of took over everything, where like these small labels were around, but they couldn't really find a way. And now that vinyl's back in this music,
it's hugely awesome.
And there's all these deep rabbit holes of music nerddom.
Mm-hmm.
That, because I look at, like, you know, there, if I read your wiki page, you're like, there are outlets commenting on, you know, sort of the lineups of your bands and whether or not, so, like, there's definitely people that are feverishly into your world.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, took, what, years to build, right?
23 years of touring now, I think, or 22 years of touring.
And now what kind of, like, what size rooms do you usually kind of jam?
I mean, it depends. Here, I always prefer to play a middle-sized club and do it multiple nights. So in New York, we'll play 3 or 4 nights at like the Bowery or Warsaw.
We'll right. Just
do a few shows because not that I have a problem with bigger clubs, but I prefer, like, I'd like a 1,000 or less club, because then the show's still, like, the people, when I go to a show at a club that has like 3,000 people or something and I'm standing in the back, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? You know, like, it's just not the same thing.
Where you can't get that weird intimacy.
It's like you're grit. Wearing 30 condoms and you're not you're not in the moment at all. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I always preferred to play. I like doing multiple nights too, because then for the pure fact of laziness, I can load the gear and we do one sound check or whatever, and then leave the fucking gear there for 3 days.
Sure.
And I can go fuck off.
Yeah.
And our sound guy's like, "Do you want to do sound check?" And I'm like, "We already did. Hell, why the hell would we do that again?" He's like, "Okay, I guess we'll just go eat again."
Just
going to Veselka and New York. Do a little, just like, how many pierogies can you fit in that thing?
Sure. So you get a residency going for a couple of nights.
We also, a lot of the places we play, we really get along with them. So in like SF, we'll play at the Chapel like 3 nights, but this time around we're doing Great American for 2 nights.
Oh yeah? That's a big room.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that big though. It just looks big. I think it's like 800 or something like that. But it's also, we were going to try and do 3 nights, but it's at the end of a month-long tour and like tacking on one more night. So it's like, and being so close to home, you're like, let's just do 2 nights
again. And I imagine that unlike bands that, you know, were punk bands at the beginning, a lot of the crowd are like, you know, guys my age. I think that you probably have
We're pretty lucky with our spectrum. Like, we have a pretty broad spectrum crowd.
Right, because you still appeal. Like, I mean, the music is pretty vital.
I get old guys who are like, this reminds me of this band that they don't know about. And, and I'm like, that's a good band. You know, my favorite are like the old English guys. They'd be like, fucking hell. They'll like walk up and be like, what the fucking? And his older friend, there'd be like 2 old drunk guys. And he'd be like, I brought him because he doesn't know shit. And he's like, I loved it. Yeah, I fucking loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my daughter. Like, his daughter's
right. Remind them of a music that no one knows anymore.
Yeah. Or I get to meet like little kids. Like, some guy will be there with this kid with like headphones on. Like sound protecting headphones, like a little baby.
So so the audience is now, because the records, there's so many records. How many records? Like 20?
19 as of the one I have coming out now. 19 full lengths, but there's been a slew of EPs and singles.
And there's a constant evolution. Like, Floating Coffin is straight up kind of psych rock almost, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little garagey.
Yep.
You know, the vocals are a little further back, mm-hmm. and that got a little echo to it, right?
Yeah, we're getting a little bit more in the front.
Right, man. And who's the woman that sings on...
Bridget Dawson.
Who?
Bridget Dawson.
And she's been with you a lot, right?
Me and her have been working together on and off for like... maybe 10 or 15 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've known Bridget's the best. She's like my sister. I've known her for, she just came up. Me and her are working on a bunch of stuff together right now. So.
Yeah, and that the one, like, An Odd Entrance, was that stuff that you recorded for A Weird Exit that didn't make it on, or
it
what?
It was just, we recorded like 2 records worth of shit, but it was like, as I was like orchestrating the first record to come on, I realized that there was like a batch of other songs that were a little bit more ethereal or far out or like a little bit, that record in my opinion was like a fans only kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Which is like, this
which
is
one? An Odd Entrance?
An Odd Entrance is more like for people who already like the band. This is not a place for somebody to start, because then you get in like, nah, I don't really get it, you know, like, or like,
where would you tell people to start?
I mean, it depends. If it depends what they like, because we have a few different directions, I think, that we work with. We have, if they like the live show a lot, then I'll always recommend the newest record, because frankly, once I get past something, I get sick of it really quick. Like, I loathe everything I've done once a year has gone by.
Really?
You know? Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's moments here and there where I'm like, every now and then I'll fantasize and be like, I'm going to do a double LP of greatest hits. And I'd be like, if I had to pick one song from every record, and there's some records where I'm like, blech. Like, I just like,
can't do it.
Yeah, but you'd have to pick one song. Yeah. Like, I don't fucking know. Like, the one that the people liked, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But but there's like a lot of like things, like, for instance, records that people really like are ones that I would recommend, like Floating Coffin was a big hit because that was the first one we hit where it's like pretty aggressively recorded.
Yeah.
And it's very close to the live show.
Right.
Really, like, kind of, we were getting really like the rock and live show.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. Yeah. But then there's also, like, you know, more acoustic records that we made that I would recommend, like,
early on.
Yeah, there's a record called, like, Hounds of Foggy Notion that has a DVD that comes with us playing it outside all over San Francisco, and it's recorded just with one microphone, and it's very intimate.
And you guys have that available still?
No. But you can find it on eBay. I don't... Actually, I want to repress it. We've been talking to this guy about doing a VHS of it, talking about some hipster retro.
Well, if it's your label, why wouldn't you keep everything in production?
Because we do keep almost everything in production. Honestly, that did not come out on our label. That came out on a label that was an affiliate of Permanent called HSBX. Capture Records. Yeah. It's like a... this guy, Ben, put that out, so I need to get in touch with him. This is like on the list of many things I need to do, but me and Matt, my partner, have been talking about getting this repressed because it was like people like that record, you know.
And what's that other label that Ty records on sometimes?
God?
No.
In the Red?
Nah, the one
Drag
that,
City?
Drag City, yeah.
Drag City does all the Ty stuff now, as far as I know.
Yeah, pretty much.
Unless Ty does like a one off.
Are you guys friends with them?
I've met them. Yeah. I don't really know them. Yeah. You know, like, they're like, I mean, it's just like, I don't know if all label guys know each other. We've shook hands. I've met one dude a bunch of times because he's always at Ty's.
There's
shows.
No conferences. There's no like.
No.
No good. Yeah.
I just don't really know him. So.
So you got a new record coming out in August.
Yes.
Right.
August 12th.
And you're touring. Like, you took a break and now you're back.
Leaving
in it.
2 days. We're going to Poland.
Have you ever
France.
Been to Poland?
Yes. Poland's fucking great. We're playing a festival called Off. Last time we played there, the people in the crowd broke a hole in the floor and I watched security rushing over to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to like stop the show because it was literally like a 3-foot hole. But instead, the security guards climbed down into the hole and stood back and just kept the crowd from falling in the hole. And I remember making eye contact with him and the guy gave me a thumbs up. He's like, no, it's okay. And I was like, I love Poland. Like, they, and afterwards they're like, great show. And I was like, I can't believe it. They're like, we don't want the people to get hurt. And I was like, that's not like security guards that I know who are like, I'm gonna choke
I wonder
that
what
kid.
It's gonna be like, because politically it's kind of crazy now.
I actually don't know what the hell's going on in Poland right now. I have no idea.
Well, there's a slight nationalistic bent, you know.
It seems to be really popular these days. What's going on, man?
I just wonder how it trickles down.
Disenfranchised youth.
Right. I wonder what, yeah, I imagine
Poland,
they're always
the thing
there.
About Europe, in my opinion, compared to the States or even the UK a little bit, is that people are really sensitive to fascism and shit over there, more so than we are, because we didn't live it as much as it wasn't on our turf. We were fighting it.
They've been through it.
But like, they were the ones getting fucking bombed. You know, so it's like, I know stories about like somebody calling somebody a Nazi over there and getting decked immediately because it's horseshit to call somebody over there. So like, stuff like that, like, that's why like Le Pen didn't make it, because people are starting to fight back.
Right. And London, you did good there?
Yeah, we just played there. We just played on the night of that fucking shooting on the bridge, which was pretty intense. It happened while we were on stage.
Wow.
So this seems like that is becoming the norm, to like hear terrible news when you wake up. When you get off stage. You're like, Sam Shepard just died. You're like, what the fuck, man? Like,
that was sad.
Oh, man. Well, we're of that age now where everybody we like is going to start dying.
That's true, man.
Somebody was saying the other day, like, people are dying really quick. And I was like, getting old. I was like, all these guys were fucking 20 when you were zero.
And they had a strong hold on their thing. Like, you know, these cats that kind of like, you know, like Bowie gave so much.
Bowie.
Built
the whole
our brains.
World cried. I watched.
Yeah, but he built my brain. Yeah, you know, like, it's so, obviously they're going to get
it's
old.
Like somebody in your family dying.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, I mean, how many of the most recent records had you really listened to? But it didn't matter. It was like, you just knew he was here.
Yeah.
And now you're here, except for the music. Did you listen? I've been listening to that last one.
It's fucking
that
great.
It's crazy.
Especially to know that in band, retrospect, dude, while he was writing it. It's like, he to me is like, do you know Scott Walker?
Yeah.
Dude, like his, Bowie and Scott Walker, both of these like crooning, I mean, obviously I'm very different ends of the spectrum of even who knows who they are, but like both of them kept going further and further out.
Yeah.
Like Bowie stopped doing like his, like what he knew would sell, and was like, bring me the best electronic drummer, you know, just didn't give a shit anymore. And you got like Scott Walker making records with guys punching sides of beef and shit for the percussion.
I know, I gotta get more into Scott Walker. I've only got a couple records.
Just start at the beginning, man, and keep moving. He's great.
All right.
But it's like another thing. It's like, heavy personalities. And
yeah.
We just saw Iggy Pop play at FYF here. And fucking dude.
It's great.
That dude's a wolf. How is he still alive? And he still looks great.
And he's so lucid. I had him in here, and he's like,
Really? That's awesome.
It was great.
Every time I've ever seen him, they take him off stage and they throw him in a car. He's like laying down like a rug. They pick him up, toss him in the car, and the car just drives away.
Rollins told me that, you know, there's a real difference between Jim Osterberg and Iggy Pop. Mm-hmm. So like when you sit down, you're talking to Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, his memory's great. Mm-hmm.
Dude's got all the stories, man.
And he knows them, though, because like you make these assumptions about dudes that live a certain life and get to a certain age, like they got to be out, you know, just brain dead or whatever. But nope.
I don't think it seemed to me, I mean, even those guys were partying, but like some of those dudes were cut out to withstand the torments of drug use or touring or whatever.
And a lot of them, the myth, it gets held in time, whereas they've moved on.
Oh yeah, they're not doing dope anymore.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. The last thing Keith Richards wants to talk about is dope.
But then you get those guys who are of that age that are still getting doping. High. I get a 70-year-old guy not too long ago. He's like, "Can you get me meth?" And I'm like, "Come on, dude. I don't want to be the guy. I don't want to be the guy that killed you. Like, I refuse to have my name with yours in the paper when you're dead." They're like, "Oh, and then this twat bought him the speed." I'm like, "It's just a picture of me." Like, I didn't know. I thought he could handle it.
But I think some of them like we were talking about before, like some of them might do a little bump to get the juices going, but they're not living the life.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I'm 42 now and I'm like, fuck that. You got to be out of your goddamn mind. I'm like, have a pint of beer. Why don't you have a drink?
Yeah.
And like, go watch Game of Thrones. What's wrong with you?
You don't want to go smoke any meth before you go on? That's a 3-day investment.
Just fucking me like a Weekend at Bernie's, like on stage, like pulling a string so he looks like he's dancing. I'm like, this was a huge mistake.
That idea. The strings are kind of cool though.
Yeah.
Well, it was good talking to you, John.
Cheers, man.
There you go. Did that get you up to speed on the Dwyer Experience? The OCS, OC's new record, November 17th. But look up Dwyer. Look him up and just go into it, man. It's a whole rabbit hole of shit there. I will play some music, much like all the music I've always played. Someday I will transcend the groove that I am stuck in. Buster lives! Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here. And when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.